This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.
Chair Jerome Powell defended the Fed's decision to pull back on stimulus as he rallied for a second term in office at a Senate Banking Committee hearing today.
It is really time for us to begin to move away from those emergency pandemic settings to a more normal level.
But lawmakers had questions on inflation and the job market. We'll have more on that coming up. And the nation reaches a new high in COVID-19 hospitalizations. Plus, how the U.S. Treasury is honoring trailblazing women. It's Tuesday, January 11th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Hospitalizations for COVID-19 have reached a record high in the U.S. The seven-day average topped 140,000 people, according to a Wall Street Journal analysis of Department of Health and Human Services data. That surpasses a previous high recorded during last winter's surge. The number of cases is putting more pressure on already strained hospital systems and staff. Although signs suggest that Omicron largely causes milder illnesses, experts attribute the high number of hospitalizations to the new variant's high transmissibility. The surge is hitting nursing homes especially hard. New federal data shows the highest number of cases ever documented among staffers, 57,000 in the most recent week, and a near-record number of residents testing positive. Nursing homes were also among the hardest hit during previous COVID-19 surges. In China, new lockdowns and widespread testing aimed at reining in Omicron are hitting major manufacturers and raising fears about the ripple effects on global supply chains. Factories are closing and ports are getting crowded. Chipmaker Samsung, automaker Volkswagen, and textile companies are among the businesses suffering production hitches. Although the response is largely in keeping with the playbook China has followed to contain the virus, economists are warning that Omicron's transmissibility and China's increasingly significant role in supply chains could mean an even greater impact than in the past. U.S. District Judge Liam O'Grady has removed himself from a nearly two-year-long case involving Amazon, citing a financial conflict of interest. Last year, The Wall Street Journal had reported about his wife's stock holdings in Amazon. O'Grady had ruled in the company's favor during the 20 months he oversaw the case, in which the online retailer accused two former employees of violating Amazon's conflict of interest policies. After the Journal contacted O'Grady, his wife's investment advisor sold the Amazon shares, valued at more than $20,000. A new judge has been assigned to the case. O'Grady was one of 136 judges for whom our investigations team identified stock conflicts. They found more than 950 cases with recusal violations since 2010. Reporter Joe Palazzolo said O'Grady's case highlights the fallout of financial conflicts of interest in our judicial system.
You know, we've been for the past year looking at judges who hear cases involving parties in which they or their families own stock. And this case really shows kind of the impact of them violating these rules, because when they violate the rules and they're called out on it, you know, in most cases, they're going to have to step aside. And when they step aside, it's going to impact the administration of justice. It's going to delay proceedings. It's going to cost people money. It's going to cost the court resources. And so that's what this story really tried to show.
Coming up, lawmakers question Fed Chair Powell on inflation and the job market.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
The Federal Reserve is facing a series of challenges this year, from steering the economy out of the pandemic, to moderating inflation, to supporting the labor market recovery. At his confirmation hearing before the Senate Banking Committee today, Chair Jerome Powell said the economy no longer needs aggressive stimulus measures, and that the central bank is prepared to raise interest rates to cool down the economy. Powell is expected to win a second term, but lawmakers did press him on how the Fed's policies will deal with inflation, which is running hotter than it has in nearly four decades. Joining me now with more on the hearing and Powell's economic outlook is Wall Street Journal chief economics correspondent Nick Timiraos. Hi, Nick. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Nick, inflation was a big topic today. Powell said, as he had before, that he expects higher inflation to level out and that the Fed is prepared to step in as needed.
What we have now is a mismatch between demand and supply. We have very strong demand in areas where supply is constrained.
So, Nick, we've been hearing the argument that inflation will be transitory for quite a while now, and we know some Fed officials are now more concerned about higher inflation than they were just a few months ago. Can you tell us a little bit more about what Powell said today about inflation and how that was received?
Well, the Fed has said for the last couple of months that inflation is going to be higher for longer than they expected. But for the most part, they think that as supply chain bottlenecks reverse, inflation will come down. The difference is that last year, if you go back 6 months, Fed officials were saying they thought inflation would come back down to the Fed's 2% target really on its own. And they're no longer saying that. They're now saying they think they will need to raise interest rates in order to make sure that inflation doesn't continue to run well above their target. And so that was Powell's message today, that this isn't something that they're characterizing anymore as solely driven by problems with supply chains or on the supply side of the economy where the Fed has no real power. You know, when Powell refers to strong demand, that's where the Fed can come in and cool down demand and bring supply and demand back into balance. So there were some discussions today around supply and demand. That's important because what Powell is effectively signaling there is, you know, if part of this is a demand story, then the Fed can actually do something about that. Cool down hiring, cool down demand to bring the economy into better balance.
And to that point, several lawmakers did question Powell on inflation, including Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, who spoke about the cost being passed on to consumers.
Today, nearly two out of three of the biggest publicly traded corporations in the country are reporting fatter profit margins than they reported before the pandemic, which doesn't sound like they're just passing along costs. So let me ask you, does that increase in profit margins combined with greater market concentration in industry after industry suggest to you that some corporations may be passing along increased costs and at the same time charging more on top of that to fatten their profit margins?
That could be right. It could also just be, though, that demand is incredibly strong and that, you know, they're raising prices because they can.
Well, that's the point. They're raising prices because they can and they're not being competed down.
What's interesting about that exchange is that Senator Warren was trying to get Chair Powell to say something that he really wasn't comfortable saying. And this is a talking point that Democrats have been using to sort of deflect the public's anxiety over inflation, say, well, it's because we have more monopolies, we have corporate concentration. And Powell sort of made a different point, which was to say, before the pandemic hit, there was a lot of concern that this corporate consolidation was leading prices to actually be lower. You heard about the Amazon effect a lot, which was this idea that Amazon was holding prices down across the retail space because they had so much market share. And so perhaps it's possible that what we're seeing now is that corporate consolidation can amplify periods of lower prices or periods of higher prices. But that really wasn't the point that Senator Warren was trying to make. And Powell tried really not to be drawn into that, you know, kind of political point making. It sounded there in that exchange like he didn't really agree with it.
Let's talk more about the Fed's monetary policy to continue steering the economy out of the pandemic. Powell said today that the economy no longer needs aggressive stimulus measures.
It's a long road to normal from where we are. Right now, we are very highly accommodative, and it is really time for us to begin to move away from those emergency pandemic settings to a more normal level.
Nick, how did lawmakers respond to this assertion? Were there questions about whether the Fed is doing enough and doing enough in the right way to respond to inflation and support the recovery?
One of the most interesting facets of this hearing was that, you know, inflation right now is running well above the Fed's target. We're going to see a report on Wednesday morning that, you know, could show inflation at 7% over the past 12 months. And so Republicans in particular are quite unhappy about that state of affairs. At the same time, the Fed is now talking about raising interest rates 3 or 4 times this year. You might think that Democrats wouldn't love that because that's going to slow down the economy. And yet, at this hearing, despite all of the things that both members of both parties could be unhappy about as it pertains to the Fed, they really didn't go after Chair Powell very aggressively. And so that speaks to the fact that he's probably going to be confirmed with a comfortable margin. And, you know, he's saying, look, we see that inflation is high, and so we're going to do something about that.
Nick, one of the Fed's mandates that Powell talks about often is reaching maximum employment. We're closely looking at the labor market situation. What is the Fed's measure of maximum employment? Can you explain how we'll know when we've gotten there?
It's difficult because the Fed has two goals. One is stable prices, which they define as inflation around 2%. But they don't have the same kind of numeric target for unemployment or for the unemployment rate. Generally, one measure you can use is the unemployment rate. And most Fed officials think that, you know, over the long run, the unemployment rate should settle down around 4% without putting upward pressure on inflation. Well, you know, in December, we learned last week that the unemployment rate fell to 3.9%. So when Chair Powell says the economy is near or is at maximum employment, that's really a sign that he's saying we can now raise interest rates, because the Fed in 2020, about 6 months after the pandemic hit, adopted guidance where they said they would keep interest rates near zero until they were confident inflation would be a little bit above their 2% target, which has clearly been satisfied, and until the economy was, you know, at conditions consistent with maximum employment. So when the Fed chair says now we're at maximum employment or we will be soon, he's effectively saying we can raise interest rates now. And that's why that exchange was so important.
That's Wall Street Journal chief economics correspondent Nick Timiraos. Nick, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, Maya Angelou, the late author, poet, and civil rights activist, has become the first Black woman to be featured on a U.S. quarter. She's one of 5 women celebrated as part of the Treasury Department's American Women Quarters program. Others include Wilma Mankiller, the first female principal chief of the Cherokee Nation, and Nina Otero Warren, a New Mexico suffrage movement leader. Here's our reporter, Allison Prang.
So I think it's no secret that the bulk of U.S. currency is dominated by white males. So this is a big deal. Among the other women who will be featured with Ms. Angelou this year are Sally Ride, for example, who's the first woman astronaut, or Anna Mae Wong, who was the first Chinese-American film star in Hollywood. So this is a way to kind of promote people, I think, who have not gotten that kind of publicity on currency in the past.
The program will continue with new faces added through 2025. The U.S. Mint says that it started shipping the Maya Angelou coins to banks on Monday. And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.